Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
So let me finish the thought that I started. Like, for better or for worse, and pretty much for worse, singing is somehow a staple on this program. This sports talk radio show, not sports singing radio show, sports talk radio show. From the caller level to the professional athlete and celebrity level, singing, unfortunately, is a big part of the jungle. Hell, one of the most well-known callers to the program is a guy named Parody Larry. Another guy named John in Little Rock has his own best of montage that Alvin keeps readily on deck.
When these calls tonight, listen, homies, just like one said, run that little clown, bitch. Run that little clown, bitch.
Gorilla balls that smell like thunder. Your parodies come from under.
Believe me. Believe me when I tell you I've never encouraged this. I've never once cracked this mic open and solicited a bad phone-in version of American Idol or the Gong Show from back in the day. And it's not just the callers to the program who have poisoned my airwaves with subpar crooning. I've got an infinite library of regrettable renditions of the national anthem from the likes of Fergie, Roseanne Barr, and Carl Lewis, just to name a few.
For the land of the
and the home of the
sultry. The only song more commonly butchered by celebrities the only song that's more commonly butchered by celebrities than the Star Spangled Banner, of course, is Take Me Out to the Ball Game, which is sung in every ballpark every night during the middle of the seventh. But on the north side of Chicago, the Cubs often invite somebody famous to grab the mic and do their worst. Wednesday, Bears head coach Matt Nagy took a break from obsessing over Cody Parkey's double doink to lead the crowd at Wrigley in the singing of baseball's most famous tune. Now, it's not like he forgot the lyrics or anything like that, but he may have forgotten a very important enunciation of a certain letter in the word peanuts. Take a listen.
And a one, a two, a three, take me out to the
crowd.
Buy me some peanuts and
Cracker Jack. Uh-oh. Buy me some what?
Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack.
Did Home Slice just say what I think he said?
Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jack.
If you think you just heard the head coach of the Chicago Bears sing the line, buy me some penis and Cracker Jack, then you're not alone. The NBC Sports Chicago cameras were pointed at the crowd during that part of the song, and just about everybody in attendance did a choreographed double take.
Buy me some penis and Cracker Jack.
Now, I'm nothing if I'm not completely fair, so I really have no choice here but to go to the replay booth, slow things down, to see if we're all hearing what we think we're hearing. Now, let's be fair about this. Alvin, roll it again, slow it down, and let's see if we can get some clarity on the line in question.
Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd.
After further review, the call on the field is confirmed. Matt Nagy said, buy me some penis and Cracker Jack. We get it, Alvin. Boy, it's been a banner week for the NFL, right? A banner week for NFL coaches talking about the nether regions. First, we had Mike Vrabel volunteering that he would lop off his Johnson for a Super Bowl. And now Matt Nagy is trying to purchase one over the counter with a box of Cracker Jacks. Yeah, can I get the Cracker Jack there and some pennies too? Very good, sir. Cash or card? If there's any word where you do not want to forget to pronounce the letter T, it's in the word peanuts. Could be worse, though, I guess. You could just forget to pronounce every letter in every word of the entire song like the Prince of Darkness, Ozzy Osbourne, did 16 years ago.
One, two, three, and let's go out to the morning. Let's go out to the river. Take me in the river. Nothing to do. I don't.
That's pretty bad. Or you could be like, no tipping, Scott Pippen, and forget a chunk of the lyrics the same way he forgets to leave a chunk of the 20% that the rest of us leave.
Take me out to the ball game. Take me out to the ball.
Aren't the lyrics on the scoreboard? Don't they give you a one sheet of the lyrics? Doesn't everybody know the lyrics? And then Matt Nagy forgot one letter and somehow managed to usurp both No Tippin' Pippin' and the Godfather of Heavy Metal as the go-to. Man, singing. High, high risk, low reward. So why would you do it? I'm looking at you, Lord of the Vape Pen, James Dolan.
Wash away my troubles, wash away my pain, with the rain in Shambhala. Wash away my sorrow, wash away my shame, with the rain in Shambhala.
I'd still rather listen to Matt Nagy sing about penis and Cracker Jack on a loop than ever hear James Dolan ever sing another note ever again.
Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some penis.
Yeah, we got it, Alvin. We got it, Alvin. Alvin, don't get crazy on your week that was with that. All right, I'm never going to tell you how to do that thing. You are the one who makes that thing ionic. Take it easy, though. Do you know what? Great. Alvin, I'm the one who's going to get called in after the show to get on a conference call with the suits. Not you. It's never you. It's always me, which is fine. I'm front and center. I get paid more than anybody else here. I got to take that heat. We are joined by Justin Leonard. Justin, good to have you on the show. How are you?
Thank you, Jim. Doing well, thanks.
Great to have you. All right, so what do you make of Royal Portrush and the way it's playing right now?
This golf course is amazing. There's more elevation change than you see in normal links golf, which just adds another factor to all the things you've got to compute in order to hit the ball the right distance. Weather was a big issue yesterday. It's not as big an issue today. There's not quite as much wind. It's changed out of a little bit different direction. The golf course is immaculate. I think I heard the members here have been hitting off of mats for about the last 9 months. Now, I don't know how much play they get up here in Northern Ireland through the wintertime, but still, there wasn't a divot on the golf course until this week. The spectators here have been amazing, and everybody's just so excited. They never thought that they would be able to host the Open here in Northern Ireland, and to actually see it here on such a wonderful golf course, it's been a great week so far.
NBC Sports analyst Justin Leonard joining us. He is the 1997 Open champion. So, Justin, take me back to yesterday. For instance, you were no stranger to pressure-packed moments, and there was just so much pressure riding on Rory McIlroy coming into the tourney. What was your reaction when you saw how things went on his first hole yesterday?
Well, that really, it took so much energy out of Rory McIlroy, but out of the thousands of people that came to watch him play. It's a fairly tight hole. I was really surprised that we even saw any balls out of bounds, because it was kind of, the wind was down off the right, which is a great wind for right-handers. He's just hitting an iron, and he just really hit a terrible shot. We can only imagine the amount of pressure that not only he put himself, but that he felt from all of Northern Ireland. He played a big role, he and Darren Clark and Graham McDowell, in getting the tournament here to Portrush. He's been playing great. He's had a phenomenal year. And I think just really the pressure of the moment that it was finally here, he's spoken about how if he was able to win this week, it would surpass any achievement he could ever accomplish in the game of golf. And that's a lot of pressure, even for a player with the ability that Rory McIlroy has. So it was a disappointing and deflating day for him, certainly. It's one of those once-in-a-lifetime opportunities. Let's face it, it would have been a complete a dream scenario had he gotten himself into contention on the weekend and then able to go on and win. Unfortunately, it's just not going to happen this week.
We're talking to Justin Leonard. Now, when you mention a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, what about the likes of J.B. Holmes and Shane Lowry? They both have had the lead at times yesterday and today. Justin, what do you make of the way the two of them have played so far?
Well, they both played brilliantly, and Shane Lowry came in here. He's had a better year this year, and certainly no stranger to links golf. He won the Irish Open as an amateur quite a few years ago. So not as surprised by him. J.B. Holmes, he won the Genesis Open back in L.A., and since then he's played terribly. He's hit the ball bad. He's missed a number of cuts. So I'm probably more surprised by his good play over Shane Lowry's. But again, we're just ending, wrapping up day two here. So there's a lot that can happen over the weekend, and it'll be interesting to see how the golf course changes over the weekend and who's able to make a run at these two guys.
We're talking Open Championship. Justin Leonard is my guest. So, Justin, if you're on that leaderboard and you see Brooks Koepka sitting there at 5-under, does it get your attention? In other words, does he have the kind of presence where if he's within a few shots of the lead, everybody in the field is going to be thinking about him?
Absolutely. They're all very aware of where Brooks Koepka is. And if anything, I felt like the pressure trying to win his third U.S. Open in a row at Pebble Beach was massive. And for him to almost win, if not for the great play of Gary Woodland, it was remarkable. So if anything, I think he comes in here with a little less pressure. That streak is over for as far as winning consecutive U.S. Opens. He won two in a row, not able to win his third. But for him, the confidence that he plays with, the skill that he's displayed over the last 2 years, and then on top of that, his caddy, Ricky Elliott, grew up here at Portrush, won a number of junior tournaments here. He's got a local knowledge of this golf course that only maybe Darren Clark and Graham McDowell surpasses. So it's almost unfair, the best player in the world playing as well as he is, and then he's got this local knowledge that only a couple guys possess. He's got a big advantage, and I didn't feel like he played that well today. I don't think he would either, but he's put himself in a great spot. See if he can make a little bit of a run tomorrow to where everybody feels the heat of Brooks Koepka on Sunday.
Justin Leonard is breaking down the Open Championship for us this morning. Justin, Tiger Woods had a rough day on the course yesterday. Better today, but he had a rough day yesterday and was talking about the fact that he's getting older. His body is not letting him do what he wants it to do, and he's not able to bounce back the way he used to. I know you saw those comments. What was your reaction when you heard them?
Not really surprising. I think it's easy to fall into the trap He won the Tour Championship to get his first victory in 5 years, and then he comes back and wins the Masters. And I think a lot of us, myself included, thought, okay, here we go. Tiger's going to go on a run again. But I think we've been reminded over these last 2 months, seeing him at the PGA Championship, seeing him this week, he's only played, this is the fourth tournament that he's played since the Masters. He doesn't look like he's feeling great. And I think we have to accept the fact that the conditions need to be right. His body needs to feel right. If those two come together, he can play against some of the best players in the world. It's just not going to happen often as we want. If we look back just 2 years ago, I remember visiting with him at the President's Cup. He was an assistant captain at Liberty National. He was not sure if he was going to play golf again. So I think we need to just kind of be thankful that we're able to catch a glimpse of it. I hope it's not over, but I think we just need to realize, as fans of the game and fans of Tiger Woods, that it's not going to happen every week. He's got to get in the right place with his body. The cooler temperatures at the PGA Championship, the cooler temperatures and wet weather here are not ideal for Tiger Woods to play his best.
Justin Leonard, my guest. Justin, before you go, I really want to ask you about your situation, and I know you're not looking to make it about you, but there was this piece on you on golf.com a couple of summers back. I thought it was really interesting in terms of your approach to the game and maybe life after the game. Like, the thinking generally for golfers is, especially those with your career and resume, is that you just keep on playing until you reach the Champions Tour, and then you dominate there for a while. Was that your approach initially? What were you thinking?
I think back, I'm 47 years old. I think back 7 or 8 years ago, and I didn't know at that time what my plan was. I was still playing, not contending as often as I would have liked, and I knew that I would kind of get to 45 and then kind of see, because that can be a bit of a no man's land for a professional golfer. And as the game has changed, you see how many young players there are and how far they hit the ball. I was just beating my head against a wall. And going through practice, all the things I need to do to try and prepare. I've got a wonderful wife that I really enjoy being with and 4 kids. And I thought, you know what, why am I putting myself through this? I'm missing birthdays. I'm missing, you know, fun family events. And I'm not showing, I don't have anything to show for it. And so I thought, you know what, it's time. I'm going to step away from the game. I'd already kind of gotten my foot in the door on the television side as an analyst. And I thought, you know what, I'm just going to focus on being the best golf analyst I can and see where that goes. And really, I haven't looked back. I've enjoyed the process of learning about this side of what it takes to be a good commentator, what it takes to put on a great telecast. I enjoy being part of a team. You know, I get the question of, well, am I going to start practicing here soon and get ready for the Champions Tour? I really don't know. I'm really locked in on being the best analyst I can be. I enjoy the process. Again, it's good people. And I enjoy trying to educate our audience as to what a player is going through emotion-wise, what it takes to prepare, all of those things, and trying to really portray that to our audience. It's been a fun process, and you know, I'm just looking forward to seeing where this takes me over the next few years.
Nicely done. So right now on CBS Sports Network, where we have our simulcast, we've got your Twitter handle up, JL Mountain Man, which is a great handle. From the looks of it, it seems like you've really embraced the mountain man lifestyle. How did that first come to be?
Well, it was probably 3 or 4 years ago. My wife says, look, I need to get on Twitter. I needed to, you know, obviously it's very late to the game. So I just signed on. I was just going to kind of watch and learn and see what people talked about, follow a few people. And 2 minutes after I sign on with JL Mountain Man, Chesson Bradley, who's a friend of mine, sends out a tweet, you know, can't wait to hear or read Justin Leonard's first tweet. And I thought, okay, here we go. So I was kind of off and running. But we moved to Colorado about 4 years ago, and we have embraced the lifestyle. I mean, I go home. I don't shave. A lot of bike riding. I ski a lot in the wintertime. Our family really spends most of our waking hours outdoors. And it's been great because it's given me something outside of the game. I filled all that time when I was playing by practicing, working out, trying to prepare for the next week. And now doing television, there's some work that needs to be done on weeks off, but I've got more time, and we're just spending that time outside. It's been a great move for our family.
Dakota Hudson is my guest. Dakota, good to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Good. Really good to have you. So I mentioned you're coming off that win last night in Cincinnati, where maybe early in the start you weren't doing exactly what you would have liked, but you battled, you didn't give in, your teammates came alive at the plate. So how good did it feel to come away with a win last night to start the series on the road?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was awesome. Like you said, kind of started off a little rocky, but team was swinging the bat real well, and it was fun to see us kind of explode there for a couple innings.
Now, I mentioned you've won three straight decisions, and you're 7-1 in your last 11 starts. One of the things that you were talking about after last night's game was the ability to make adjustments and figure things out. I mean, it really is a veteran approach, especially given that you're not even at the one-year anniversary of your MLB debut. So how much of pitching is about the right stuff, and how much of it is about making the right adjustments?
I definitely feel like this stuff helps, but I feel like I've had kind of a lot of help from a lot of veteran players on our team to help me kind of shape how my mind works out there on the mound in order to get through whatever I'm doing. So that's a tribute to our older catchers and Wainwright, and then having Maddox back there for me.
Dakota Hudson joining us. I want to ask you about some of those guys in a moment or so, but if you go back to your MLB debut, it was on July 28th of last year against the Cubs. Take me back. What do you remember about that day?
Well, I remember being nervous the entire day, getting up, and then I think I got humped a little bit the day before, so I got up and warmed up in the bullpen. I think that kind of settled me in for the next day. But I came out and I'm pretty sure it was a standing ovation before I even threw my first pitch as a Cardinal. So it was a lot of fun, a lot of excitement in the air, and it was a blast, dream come true.
Yeah, so I wonder, less than a year later, you're now a critical part of that rotation, and you're in the middle of a battle for a postseason spot. I mean, does that seem pretty normal and natural to you, or does that still seem a little bit surreal?
I mean, it feels like I'm out there competing. You know, I've been playing ball for a long time now, so it just feels like I'm out there competing and trying to win a game.
Dakota Hudson joining us. So it feels pretty normal. You know, last year you mentioned Maddox. Last year you worked out of the bullpen, and the story goes in December, pitching coach Mike Maddox called you up and said you should spend the offseason preparing to be a starter. You had done that in the past, but what did it mean to you to know that the big league club was looking for you to start right now?
Oh, it meant a ton. I mean, they trusted what I did, and they liked what they saw whenever I was throwing last year out of the bullpen. It just means that they wanted me to figure out how to do that for a longer period of time and eat up some innings and throw out some quality starts out there. So I felt like they trusted me to kind of bust my butt in the off season and get ready for a long season this year.
So how does that work? How do you go about preparing in the off season to be a starter this season?
A lot of it's different. You know, you got to get in shape and be able to have the endurance to go longer and throw more pitches. And you just got to basically work around a routine. So it was about just finding a routine and figuring out how to get my body back and stronger and just being able to use that for a longer period of time. So it's more about physical stuff, and then the mental stuff I've kind of learned and had to pick up as my experience has kind of come along here.
Cardinal starter Dakota Hudson joining us. And then there's the stuff about, well, the stuff. A big part of your success is your sinker, and the fact that, as your teammate Jack Flaherty says, quote, guys just bury it into the ground, end quote. So when did you first develop the sinker, and at one point did you know, I don't just have a good one, I've got a great one?
I'd say my sophomore year, I was more over the top in college, and then I kind of dropped down a little bit to have a little bit more command with speed stuff, and then I just kind of gripped a two-seam grip, and it just started moving. And then the one-seam I'm throwing now was Adam Wainwright's grip, actually, that just showed more consistent movement for me and had a little bit more dive. So able to kind of get more consistent action in order to command it a little bit better.
Now, at the same time, I know that you're smart enough to know that if that's all you throw or you fall in love with that pitch, guys are going to figure it out. So how do you go about having a sinker as a weapon but also protecting it so you make sure that it's there when you need it?
Yeah, I mean, the cutter slider is kind of working to the other side of the plate, so I feel like I can kind of split the plate a little bit to get me in some positive counts. And then I've been able to try and read hitters a little bit, and maybe see whenever I can dump in that slider, or if I got a change up or need a change up, I just pitch to kind of a situation a little bit.
You mentioned Wainwright. What's it like having him around to watch the way he goes about his preparation, the way he works, and basically to have a guy like that whose brain you can pick?
I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, the amount of experience that he's had and the games he's pitched in, and he's got decent experience. I mean, we're always in there in the dugout talking about things that have gone on in his career, and I feel like, honestly, like with him sharing experience, it does help bring us younger players up to par, or at least we learn one thing, or maybe learn something from him that we keep from doing ourselves. And it definitely breeds positivity, and it breeds some confidence in there.
Dakota Hudson joining us. You know, it seems to me that you're taking all this in stride, but when you look back at 2018 for a moment, that's a year that saw you celebrate your first full year of marriage, the birth of your son, your major league debut. These are all amazing events, and they all happened within the past year or so. What's it been like to go through all of that in one year?
You know, my family is very important to me. Those are both benchmarks with them that are huge. I take pride in having my family with me. But it's just been unbelievable, you know. My wife is always my number one supporter, and for me to be able to share those moments with her, and then not only that, but be able to tell my son that he was actually around a big while, it's all awesome, you know. It's a great part of being a player, but also a great part of just having a family and that experience you get to share with them.
And speaking of family, growing up, you moved around quite a bit because your father, Sam, was an Army lawyer, but your dad says that every time the family moved, quote, within several hours of being there, there'd be a ton of kids gravitating toward him and his brothers. I mean, Dakota, I don't know about you. It sounds like this was not that hard for you. I think I moved once as a kid. I'm still not right from that one move. It's not for everybody. What do you remember about that experience, and how were you able to fit in? Were you able to fit in so smoothly and easily when you moved?
Yeah, well, I had three brothers, so whenever we moved places, we would always be outside playing with each other. And then a lot of the military places that we lived, they required you to have a few kids to be in the neighborhood. So there was always, you know, other to get around and play. And so making friends came easier because I already had, you know, my best friends at in my own house. So it was a lot of fun. It was just extremely hectic. But it's made moving around in the baseball life a little bit easier for me.
And then in terms of that baseball life, I'm sorry, Dakota Hudson, my guest. Go ahead, finish. I'm sorry about that.
Oh, I was just saying as we go along, it's been easier for me.
I was jumping in on you because I couldn't wait to ask you about your college experience. I love college baseball, but when you got to Dunlap, Tennessee, where you played your high school ball, you were really good, and then you move on to Mississippi State. What was that particular transition like?
I'd say that was the tougher transition. Just because I went from basically throwing fastballs to seeing some quality hitters and having to make some adjustments. And so my eyes kind of opened to there being more to baseball than just throwing hard or, you know, doing everything physically. There was a lot more of the mental side and then the preparation that came with it. So I felt like college kind of opened my eyes to that and allowed me to kind of create what I want. Create myself and to be the best me and figure out what that meant for me.
All right, so the transition was challenging. In the first couple of years in Mississippi State, may not have gone the way you would have liked. You didn't play a ton. The coaches there chose to take away your scholarship after 2 years. It would have been easier for you to be angry and leave, but you didn't. How come?
Yeah, I mean, they sat me down and they said, listen, you know, you haven't had a whole lot of innings to kind of show for it. And I mean, I was on a bigger scholarship, an 11.7 scholarships in baseball, there's, you know, partial scholarships being given out, and I had a bigger one for the team, so I understood that, you know, it's part of it, and kind of went into the Cape and just kind of buckled down and tried to figure out what it meant for me to be a baseball player, and I kind of put all my eggs in one basket and went for it. But the coach staff is always extremely supportive of me, so I felt like it was a good place to go back for and have my best shot at being a professional.
Yeah, so finally, you did come back, and you had a huge junior year after you had that conversation, and you put in the work. So how much did you learn about yourself and grow as a result of that experience and the way you responded?
Yeah, I mean, I felt like I was more resilient than I was before, you know. I felt like I was able to kind of come back from anything once that happened. but it kind of put me in a situation where, you know, I had to make choices as a man more so than a kid. So, and I had to figure out what I wanted for my life. And so that was where I kind of took it.
Andy Isabella is my guest. Andy, it's good to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Good to have you. All right, so rookies have reported for camp. What's it been like for you so far? How is life?
We're just getting back into things, just doing some easy walkthroughs and workouts, getting ready for the older guys to come back and start practice next week.
All right, so it's been a little under 3 months since you were drafted. What's that time been like, for instance, in terms of joining the Cardinals, getting the playbook, installing the offense, and everything else that comes along with it?
It's been awesome. It's everything I could have dreamed of, playing the NFL and stuff. And it's been a lot of time to take in, but taking it day by day and just focus on getting better and focus on what I can do each day.
Andy Isabella joining us. So the team's coming off kind of a tough year last year, but you got a new head coach. You have a lot of new faces on the staff. There's a lot of young talent. Like, what's the vibe like around that team right now?
It doesn't seem like it would be it was a bad team last year from everyone's energy and stuff. I mean, the energy is always great. From coming in, you can't really tell. It was a bad team, and I think we're poised for a good year this year.
All right, so what's it been like to work with head coach Cliff Kingsbury so far?
It's been fun. He's a lot of energy and keeps things moving fast, so it's fun working with him.
Speaking of fast, I would ask you about what it's like to work with Kyler Murray, but before I get to that, let me ask you about a race that was held between you and Murray. There seems to be some controversy about who won that race. Who was the winner as you saw it?
I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to make him mad.
Come on now, man. So, like, how did that race go? What happened?
I was beating everyone on another line, and then he thought he wanted a race, so I was like, I was getting bored racing the other guy, so I went and started standing next to him. And he was talking trash, and then I started smoking him, and then he was getting mad, and then that was the only one that he came close to with. But he's fun competing with, it's fun being around. We were just out there having fun with each other.
All right, then. So speed aside, and you touched on it, but what are your early impressions of Murray and what he's been like as a quarterback and a teammate in the early going?
He's been awesome. I mean, it's definitely number one overall draft pick, someone that you look up to. I mean, someone that when he does something, everyone else around him kind of follows. And I think he's in that role, and he knows it, and he's done a great job for us.
Andy Isabella is my guest. You know, camp's interesting. There's always some weird things or funny things that happen. Early on, you were making the trip from the rookie hotel to the facility on a bike. How did that come to be?
I actually moved out of the hotel. I got a little apartment, but I didn't have a car to get there, so I had a bike. but that got old really quick. It was like a mile and a half ride. I mean, this doesn't sound that long, but when you're driving home after you've been there since 6 a.m., or you have to get up at 5 a.m. just to get there and ride the bike a mile and a half, and then when you're leaving at 6 p.m. or 7 p.m., yeah, it was usually 7 p.m. we were leaving on a bike, and it's 100 degrees out. It's not that fun.
No, dude, I was going to say, if that's a 12-hour work day and you're putting in the time, and like in Arizona, it's probably like 150 degrees at 6 p.m., I bet that would get pretty old. So you decide to upgrade from the bike to a car. What kind of a car did you end up with, and why?
Well, I was originally going to get just a little car, but then they said I could get the same car for the same price. I could get a Camaro for the same price. So I ended up getting a Camaro. Still pretty cheap. I'm not trying to save all my money. I've been doing pretty good with that.
Dude, hell yeah, Camaro. Like, so tell me about the Camaro. What's that car like? Some American muscle right there.
Yeah, I always wanted a sports car growing up, so I guess I treated myself a little and kept it in means, and it wasn't, I got a 2012, so it wasn't like I was buying a brand new one. But
dude, you're being responsible. SYM, save your money. Andy Isabella joining us. Now, if we go back, you mentioned growing up, the types of things you were thinking about. You're from Ohio. One of your brothers, Nick, said your favorite hobby was to call a local sports radio show as LeBron Jameson. Is it true? And what kind of things would you call about?
That's why we would, me and my brother, we caddied every summer, and we would get bored. We would sit there all day, and we would get pretty bored sometimes, so we would call 92.3 the fan. We would say we were LeBron Jameson, and then they usually hang up pretty quick. But we would hear it on the, we would have the radio playing next to us, so we would hear us say LeBron Jameson on the radio because it would be a live show. And then we would hang up really quick, and then we got our entertainment. They started catching on pretty quick, though.
That's how we got our entertainment. Man, you should have been calling me as LeBron Jameson. I would have taken that phone call. Given the calls that I get on this show, I would have taken that call back in the day. Now, you played your high school ball at Mayfield High School, but the story goes you didn't have any FBS offers roughly a week before signing day, and then you drop a 6'7", 60-meter in an indoor track meet, the fastest time in the country at that point of the indoor season. What do you remember about that run, and then UMass contacting you afterwards? What happened?
I remember the run, actually, and then I didn't really know what I did at that point, but then about a couple hours, or when I woke up the next morning, I was getting a bunch of text messages and stuff about how it was the best time in the country at that point and stuff like that. And I was helping a friend on the track team, and his dad coached at another school, and he had a lot of connections, and he had almost got me an Oklahoma State offer, and Oklahoma State was gonna fly me out one of the next day to go down there, but then that didn't end up going through, so then I had nothing. And then about a week later, he calls me and says, I finally got you a scholarship to UMass. And I had one other, I had an Air Force offer and a couple FCS offers, but ended up taking a blind shot at UMass and ended up working out pretty well for me.
Yeah, that blind shot. So the head coach there, Mark Whipple, calls you up after that 6'7", 2. He offers you the scholarship. At that point, how much did you know about that football program? How much did you know about it when you accepted the offer?
I didn't even know UMass existed until Coach Rotsky was the guy who got me, knew Coach Whipple. He was coaching over at Cleveland Heights at the time. He's at Euclid now, and he said, "Yeah, I got it's a Division I school." He said, "That's all I needed to hear."
Dude, this is amazing. Like, all you did is lead FBS in receiving last year. You became a Biletnikoff Award finalist. When you have a career like that, the one you had at UMass, and you put up numbers like the ones you had against Florida or Mississippi State or Georgia and just about every other big-time program you faced, is there any part of you that wants to say to all of them, "How do you all like me now?"
I mean, yeah, that's how I felt going into those games for sure. But I'm happy I ended up at UMass. I think it was a good fit for me. And Coach Whipple used me well, and I had fun playing with Coach. And I'm excited now for the future.
Let me ask you this. Like, your work ethic is the stuff of legend. There's a story from January of 2017. After a big snowstorm dumped 26 inches on campus, you went out, you shoveled enough of the field so you could work out. The strength coach at that time said, quote, "There was a wind chill of minus 10. He's all layered up. He had a sled with him. So he's going to tow the sled and do sprints on a Sunday in January after shoveling 40 yards worth of snow." I always bring up that moment because that's when I understood this cat was different. Yeah, he's talented. Yeah, he's fast. But that's when I realized he's on another level, end quote. You know, that kind of praise from a strength and conditioning coach is almost unheard of. Where did the mentality and the mindset come from?
To be honest, I was just bored up at UMass. I didn't really know too many people up there, so I was just spend my time working out. That's what I like doing. So, I mean, on Sunday afternoon, I was bored. I wanted to get a workout in. And usually coach would have the field plowed, but he didn't plow it that day. And he kind of made fun of me, like, "Hey, you can't work out now." So he had a shovel in his locker. So I told him, "I'll screw it. I'm gonna shovel the field." He didn't believe me until he went out there and saw me shoveling it.
Good story. Andy Isabella joining us. I like that. Now, back in June, you and fellow rookie Keyshawn Johnson were roommates at the Rookie Hotel. Like, what's the Rookie Hotel like? What was that experience like, and how was he as a roommate?
Oh, Keyshawn's awesome. I mean, he's you know, when you room with a guy, you think sometimes they're going to be a goofball, or they're not going to be on the same amount of commitment as you are. But Keyshawn, I mean, he right from the bat, he's always committed to going to sleep on time, getting up early, and doing all the right things. And that's someone who I like rooming with. And so he was an awesome roommate. I mean, he has the same focus as me, has same ambition, same goals. And I think he has a big chip on his shoulder too. And we both got a lot to prove. And the Rookie Hotel, I mean, there's not much there. you got two beds, and there's no kitchen or nothing. So you're kind of on your own.
Andy Isabella is my guest. You know, you mentioned what it was like growing up and the kind of thoughts you had. And then finally, there's this famous photo of you from a Thanksgiving football game back in 2009. In that photo, you're rocking a Larry Fitzgerald jersey. Now you and the old head are teammates. I mean, what's that like?
It's kind of crazy. I never even saw it. I didn't realize I had a Larry Fitzgerald jersey. I forgot I had one, but I think that's pretty cool. I mean, he invited us up to his house to run some routes, so that was awesome experience. He's been awesome to everyone. I mean, it's been fun learning from him.
I've been waiting all week for this, Alvin. Do it.
Hey everyone, let's get real for a few minutes.
Welcome to the jungle. What's going on? My name is Jim Rome. Hope you had a great weekend. Nice to have you here on a Monday. The show sets up like this. I've got a telephone number. It is paid for. You get through Adam Hawk. You get the rotation. You get on the air. You get wrecked. Maybe you get a golden ticket. Find out about you. They follow you on Twitter. They check your social. And all of a sudden, you get yourself a little brand. I'm like the idol maker. I'm here to help you. You know how I feel about the sport of tennis. It's a sport that I go way back with.
Transmutated in your way.
Djokovic. Transmutation complete. Final thought, he had 15 Grand Slam titles already. So he didn't go legend yesterday. He was already a legend. We are going to drive across town to Brentwood and kick it with Andre and Brooke. Janet proceeds to tell me, we're not going to go all Hollywood. We are going to be real, and we're going to spend New Year's Eve with this couple and be among our best friends. Well, they're among your best friends, not mine, Elton Brand.
It's such an amazing sports town, and everywhere I go, like, I take my wife to dinner, and it's like, hey, can you do this trade? Hey, what's going on with this? EB this, EB that.
And like CP3, he's becoming more and more tone deaf by the possession. Imagine James Harden looking at him on the floor in a critical playoff game. Man. With you, it's always bleeping something. Doesn't sound like there's a whole lot of mutual respect there. Michael Malone is my guest.
And I'm not done growing. I constantly want to challenge myself to be the best coach that I can be, the best father that I can be, and the best husband that I can be.
Hey, John, you know how you will know your email is being read on this show? It will always begin with Beck going forward. I've taken it from Eric and given it to you. What an honor that must be. Loser.
How much longer will you have the mullet?
Brah. Don't ever suggest that there's going to be a day where that beaver paddle does not cover the back of his neck. The thought of him without a neck warmer makes me want to puke.
Makes me want to puke.
Francisco Lindor is my guest.
My team left and I wasn't there to be there with them. It is upsetting me. It sucks.
Nailed it. All right. Nailed it. You might not be allowed to self-gloss, but you can self-gloss.
He glossed me.
This guy self-glossed. We are joined by Julie Ertz.
Finally settled down. I got some sleep, but really good.
I bet.
Bro, who's making this?
Every single year, people take the bait. Reminds me of Trevor Price. Don't take the cheese.
Let Deshaun. Ooh, excuse me. Yeah, do that again.
Whoa. I'm from Cleveland, man. They call me Bobby Allsport.
Back to it, John and Cali.
I'm Denver John. Do you remember me when the Mighty 690?
I sure do, John. Bob in Calgary. Get me through the end of the hour. What's up?
I'm known as the Horse Whisperer.
Christian in Maine.
Hey, what's up, Romy? It's your main man here.
Alvin's got to be like, dude.
He's like trash man.
Lonnie Carter in Spokane.
Yeah. Bighorn Falling Off.
Jay Dizzle. Manic Cheeseburger over here.
Chuck Hall is Van City.
Lone Prophet.
The Grump. The Grouch.
Moldoggy in NorCal. The
Juggler. Zookeeper.
Roaster Garbage Man for Acid.
Cracker Jack.
G Money. Sexy Rexy from New Mexico.
The Red Dog.
Horse Pokey. Free Frog.
G Money.
V Man. SD. Bow Down.
V Man.
Cotton Woman. Castilly Rabbit.
Barracuda.
Muffle Shark.
Denver John. The Horse Whisperer.
Main Man here.
Franklin Session, my guest. One of the things you tell them is try to stay on the floor.
I will say, man, you have a lot of information. You hear just about everything, Jim.
He's a veteran, B.A. Oh, hold on. Things heating up.
Drowning pool will make everything better. Not only do I not want him to retire, I want him to keep playing long enough so that he can have a feud with the Rays in Tampa and Montreal. Steve Elkington.
He's gone full earth mode, mate.
Special coffee blend.
Well, you know what, Hefty? Maybe you want to dribble a little Frankenskank essential oil on your T-ball. Great white at four Big Macs. Just vacuum six chocolate eclairs.
Taco Tuesday! Man, poor Alex Caruso. Probably watching Instagram last night, sitting all alone in a jack-in-the-box parking lot.
It's Tuesday somewhere.
DJ.
You do top five lists and you can do predictions, but like, look, everybody's just talking out of their butt.
That's right, John. Whenever you email your Eric and Paul Church impression, you'll hear Yakety Sax email behind, song behind your emails. That's exactly who you are, John. Clown music for a clown person.
Take me out with the crowd.
Heard the head coach of the Chicago Bears sing the line, buy me some penis and Cracker Jack, then you're not alone. Alvin, don't get crazy on your week that was with that.
Ow! We'd say we were LeBron Jameson, and then they usually hang up pretty quick.
Belly bomb.
He's not done yet.
Always great being on with you, and I look forward to doing it again soon.
Bill Callahan type asshat.
Holy moly.
Greasy hot snake.
Motherf***ing
dermatology recommended.
I give him the Willie and Casey.
Giddy up, horse face.
Penis.
But not today.
Good night now.
Alvin DeLauro, that's why it's iconic.
Good night,